Good morning and welcome to our roundtable panel. I'm Joe Donahue. It is great to have you with us on this Monday morning. Let me introduce our fantastic panel to you, beginning with, where has she been? Our political consultant, Libby Post, with us, and she was lost for a few weeks. She's back. She was busy. Now she's not, and she's here.
Oh, that's not enough.
No, that's not true.
Now you got nothing to do. Yeah, so
right.
You're with
us. I'm here. Right.
Less busy.
Right.
And
she is so smart. That's why we love her.
Yeah. We miss you.
I miss you guys too. I was really disappointed, but you know, it was a wedding. It was vacation. It was Buffalo. You know how it is.
Buffalo. Shuffling off to Buffalo
right,
again.
Well done.
Always use Buffalo as an excuse.
Yeah, next week again. So.
So we'll see you next week.
Yes,
excellent. I think we'll even have Rosemary back next week. So.
Oh, boy.
Rosemary is making a rare appearance.
Yes, she apparently is back from wherever.
She was.
Wherever the agency sent her.
the company, you mean.
Yeah, right. Ray Graff is with us. Good morning, Raymond.
Good morning,
and,
Joe.
Of course, Dr. Alan Chartok is here as well at the head of the round table. Good morning.
Good morning.
Excellent. Let us talk about... that big story that's just been dominating the world here for all weekend long. It was the subject of every Sunday news show because as we still, after the government shutdown, try to figure out winners and losers and all of this, the question comes, what about Obamacare? And what keeps on being said, I know David Brooks made this point on Friday on All Things Considered, saying, look, if the Republicans hadn't barked up this tree and had made such a big deal about it, the big story would have been the glitches in the rollout on Obamacare, and that would have been more potent and more fitting in the
strategy.
In the strategy of trying to show that this is in some way bad legislation. So with all of that comes the president saying that he feels that the glitches in the new healthcare website are unacceptable. And he's expected to make remarks this morning, which we probably won't be able to get because NPR doesn't cover those things anymore, apparently.
Oh, come on now.
Oh, no. About that, you mean. But about the actual live.
Yeah, so the live.
We'll see. They might surprise you.
Oh, sure. I'm sure they will.
But I can tell you this much. At WAMC, when something goes wrong that shouldn't go wrong, you have to peel my head off the ceiling. I mean, you know, because what can I tell you except that you try to be nice to everybody, but there are times like this one where it is so embarrassing.
Execution is everything.
What, it's not on?
No, what you're saying is exactly that point, right?
Yeah, execution is everything. I have boom.
Yeah.
as we say around here. But, you know, you have to understand that here's this guy. It's his signature program. They pay a fortune. The government pays a fortune to the smartest and brightest people, and they screw it up. He has every right to be furious with his subordinates. Now, as you know, in the end, it's always the guy at the top who takes the chop in the neck, no matter what happens. So, it's called Obamacare, which so many people don't like. I even hear the Democrats using Obamacare.
He used it several times.
Yeah. So why? I mean, it's his program. You name it after him. That's fine with me. So from where I'm sitting, he's going to have a press conference today. He's going to say what? He's going to say, this is intolerable. And everybody who's ever been a boss anywhere or has ever known anything is going to say, yeah, he got screwed by his own people. Don't you think?
Yes, but I don't know if you can hear my eyes rolling. I mean, this is a massive rollout of a piece of technology. There's bound to be glitches.
Yeah.
It's unfortunate that this happened, but it's not the end of the world. And they didn't hire the best and the brightest, because I saw a piece, I know it was on the news somewhere.
Well, then shame on him.
Right. Well, it wasn't him that made the decision, though. It was the folks
shame
at
on him.
HHS. But the company that they hired from Canada...
Her, actually.
Has not been the most reputable, unfortunately. And it's a shame that they were able to get... I think it's called CGI. They were able to get through this whole process and be hired for this. They were hired initially for, a certain amount of money, and now it's tripled. And
well,
it just
happens,
keeps going up. Yeah,
but if your name is Franklin Roosevelt or Lyndon Johnson or, you know, Barack Obama, in the end, if it doesn't work, it's on your plate.
It's true. It's absolutely true. But if you were Lyndon Johnson or FDR, you know, or even Bill Clinton, you wouldn't have the massive technology to be able to be screwed up on your behalf.
Can I also?
I mean,
sure,
you know,
right,
I'm not
that.
Making any excuses here. It's just we need to have a little perspective, and that anything this massive is bound to have problems.
Listen, I'm sorry, Joe. I have perspective. I feel sorry for the guy. I know because I've been there on a much smaller scale.
Been.
Yeah,
right.
That people can let you down.
Yep.
What about the argument that is being made not by the president but by people in his corner who say, well, you know, you can also expect glitches when you have so many governors, especially Republican governors, who are working so hard against you because they don't want – because they're not accepting of the program in the first place?
As a 2,000-year-old man might say, that was good.
Yeah.
That's a point.
Well, you know, I mean, you know, the U.S. site, the federal site, wouldn't have to be as massive and take on so much if the exchanges were being set up in all the other states and they were taking care of it as they're supposed to, and they didn't. The
some
bottom
are,
line,
some aren't.
Yeah, right. I mean, New York did, and they. I looked at the numbers yesterday. They had the second highest amount of people who had signed up. Who knows what that really means at this point? But you know, the proof is going to be in the pudding. People are going to get health care coverage. We're going to be a healthier nation. And, you know, the Republicans can try to say this is not the problem with the Affordable Care Act. This is a computer glitch. This is a problem with mechanics. It's not it's not the problem with what's going to happen, and that is people are going to get covered.
You know, Libby, the party out of power's job is to criticize, critique the party in power.
And, right. That's all they have to do.
And in this case, it's appropriate. Right. They have to say it. I loved what you had to say. I want to believe it.
We're disagreeing about something.
Not
this is
really.
Great.
Not
and I'm in between. I like this.
So, you know, you talk about the...
You're the soft middle.
Yes, yeah, I do. Thank you for that.
Very well put.
All right, Libby, good to see you again.
So here's just exactly what you were talking about, the party in power, party out of power.
Yes.
So it depends on what you're looking at, right?
Mm-hmm.
So with this, there is this article in the Washington Post that makes the point there's so much more they wanted to do. 3 years ago, Republicans retook the House with a fire-eating confidence and an ambitious plan to remake the U.S. government. They wanted to cut spending, of course. They wanted to get rid of Obamacare, but that wasn't supposed to be the list. That was supposed to be the start. The House GOP also wanted to take away funding from PBS and Planned Parenthood. They wanted to change the future of Medicare. They wanted to roll back EPA regulation of greenhouse gases and of mountaintop removal mining and of Chesapeake Bay. Now, after forcing four national crises, the House GOP can count one major victory, one major defeat, and a large number of opportunities.
Can you remind us what they are?
Well, I think the one government spending was cut. That was
the sequester, which
the
is
the victory.
Well,
sort of kind of.
I'm going to be honest with you about that one. I think that wasn't theirs alone. I mean, I think everybody knew, including the Democrats, and you know, they all learned from the Clinton experience that there's a point at which you have to stop it. It's just going too far. And so I don't think they get full credit for doing that. After all, the president had to participate in it, and he did.
Right. It's the one that they're counting as the victory.
But yeah,
the point of it is that the opportunities lost of them, of the GOP being the of the House in power, obviously. So why are they not able to do more? And why are these opportunities being lost?
And that's where the Republicrats come into play. That's why Ted Cruz is so popular in the state of Texas. Because he's saying, yeah, these guys all play together. You know, I'm the real thing. I'm the real McCoy.
What do you think is going to happen to Ted Cruz?
Well, it depends on how far out he plays his cards. I mean, I'm old enough to remember in great depth the late 40s, early 50s, mm-hmm. and Joe McCarthy.
Mm-hmm.
And what happened was he got so taken up with his own deal of the anti-communism that he began to either believe it or to... whatever, and he was ended up censured by the Senate, and then he died of, tragically for him, of cancer of the throat.
We're going to take a break. We will be back in just a moment, and we welcome your comments. Roundtable at WAMC.org. Roundtable at WAMC.org. Whatever you have on your mind, we'd love to hear from you. Roundtable at WAMC.org. It's next on the Roundtable. Welcome back to our roundtable panel. We're going to continue our conversation about healthcare and the glitches and the rollout and what is going on. Again, the president will be holding an event at in the 11 o'clock hour this morning in the White House Rose Garden with consumers, small business owners, and pharmacists who have been affected by the new law. The move is the latest high-profile step to really damage control, I guess, is the term, and the effort by the administration in damage control to oversee some of the technical problems with the website healthcare.gov, and which have prevented Americans nationwide from signing up for the program that will largely define the President Obama's domestic policy legacy, many believe. With that said, however, there is we should note that according to the Washington Post, the White House announced weeks ago that it would not release Obamacare enrollment data until November. On Saturday, however, it gave application data to the Associated Press. That information doesn't really make clear how many people will actually sign up for the health plans. However, here's the data. Administration officials say about 476,000 health insurance applications have been filed through federal and state exchanges, the most detailed measure yet of the problem-plagued rollout. Later in the story, they identify these as 476 applications that have been started, not necessarily completed. The Obama administration describes them differently, saying that nowhere does the story get into enrollment, those figures, and which they still say will not be available until mid-November. So they just gave some numbers out which don't really have
Health insurance companies don't count it until they get a check for the first premium.
Right.
So that, you know, that would be when you see that who's paying, then you'll see who's in.
But to me, 500,000 people who have been able to sign up.
That's pretty good.
I mean, that's
yeah, but NPR has done story after story in which they go to people who went and got a series of very silly numbers, you know, on their screen, and they couldn't get in, and that's disgraceful. I mean, you know, there's no need for that. We heard from Norman Douglas, by the way, Joe, who said, "Recall that the FBI move to a new digital information system was a complete failure. After spending hundreds of millions of dollars, they had to scrap the new system, start over. The spotlight should be placed on the corporate vendors' failures with respect to Obamacare and the FBI." That supports the Libby thesis.
Well, thank you. I mean, the other part of this is, I mean, it's bad that the website is what it is, and it's not working properly. But, you know, a lot of these folks, these 47 million people without health care, you know, might also not have, I'm sure a lot of them are going to their public libraries, not to give a plug to the people I do work for, but going to the public libraries for help. Because they don't have computers at home, they don't have wireless access, they don't have broadband. I mean, you know, and so I'm sure there's many, many factors at work here. But I have a feeling we will see more people signing up.
You know, Libby, you have put your finger right on it. If you think of it, because part of what American politics has devolved to is we have no poor as far as politics are concerned. Now, the 40 million people are basically the poorest of our society.
They certainly are.
Most of them are. I don't think all of them are, but most of them are who are not signed up. The politicians don't like to talk about that. They talk about middle class. If they have to, they talk about the working poor. But they don't talk about the people because those folks don't always vote their interests and don't coalesce to do what they need to do in order to get power. And so I'm fascinated by the fact that we talk about the 40 million, but we don't pay attention to exactly what it is that makes somebody go to a public library if they're going to go anywhere.
Well, that's true. I mean, we have seen since the recession in 2008 a massive increase in the use of libraries. And if you want to get a job these days,
sure.
you have to almost always apply online. And the people who work at McDonald's and Walmart and the other kinds of big box stores, you know, don't have the skills to be able to go online and fill out an employment application. And so they go to their public library. They're certainly not going to have the skills to go online and apply for Obamacare and talk about their income thresholds and all the rest of that stuff. And they're going to need help to do that.
I just got a thing from New York State because I'm a retired professor. Mm-hmm. And part of the payout was you have choices, and mine was that they're going to pay for my drug habit.
Oh, that's nice.
My drugs. Yeah, it's a wonderful benefit.
Yeah.
Now I get something from New York State that I cannot understand. My wife cannot understand.
And you're a PhD,
it. That's
so
right.
Just imagine.
Former full professor,
right.
Two full professors trying to read this thing. We haven't got a clue as to what it meant. And now trans...
By design, don't you think?
Yeah. I think it is by design. I think, you know, and then if you try to call, forget about it, Jack.
Oh,
that's
God.
Not, it's not doable.
No, it's not.
So what is this? Am I okay? Do I have to do anything here? And I think that the same thing is true with Obamacare, with Affordable Health Act, that this is very difficult stuff to negotiate, and you've got to really get out and do it, and that's very hard for a lot of people.
Yep.
And didn't we have this whole thing, didn't we have like the exact same concerns, questions, not to the depth perhaps, but certainly over President Bush's Medicare and Part B and all of that,
yes.
All those plans and,
yes.
And with the, you know, coming out with what plan you're going to do. And it became, you know, well, who was going to be in charge of actually explaining to people what it is that they... Mm-hmm. We're going to take, and suddenly pharmacies took on that role.
Well, you know, they made money. You know, it's just that simple. They made money. You know, and AARP made a lot of money.
They made a lot of money.
They made a lot of
well,
money.
Well, there are people who think AARP is heading towards becoming an insurance company itself.
I wouldn't doubt it.
Yeah.
You know, I wouldn't doubt it. They're next topic.
Oh!
Wow!
Really? Do you?
We
have a couple of minutes
there?
Left.
No,
maybe,
it's just. I mean, I get mail from them all the time because Lynn did me the favor when I turned 50 of signing me up, so I'm a member. You
well,
know.
Good for you.
You know, but they are more business than they are a nonprofit. And the advocacy stuff, I don't see for them as being as important anymore as creating those income streams through insurance and all the different
Without question. What did they really got burned? Does anybody remember what they...
They got burned because the feds came in and did an audit and said... This is profit making. You have to pay taxes on
no,
this.
No, but they got burned because they took a policy position back in the day.
Yes,
they agreed with the Bush stuff.
Yes,
I
think that's what happened.
Yeah.
And
they
boy, did
the
they
donut.
Get beaten up? A lot yes. of people resigned.
Yeah.
Good, Ray. You made you.
What?
Stretch that.
That yeah, that was
good.
Fun.
Yeah, yeah,
that
was
fun.
Let's take a break. When we come back, we will continue on in our discussion real quick. We'll go to this note from Jana, who says, let it be not forgotten that Obama and the Dems began using the name Obamacare only after the right was succeeding at turning it into a slur. She wanted to make that point. We welcome your comments as
Very
well.
Good point.
Roundtable@WAMC.org. Roundtable@WAMC.org. We'll continue our conversation on our roundtable panel after this short break. Welcome back to the roundtable panel. Thank you very much for being with us. Libby Post is back in her rightful spot, and we're thrilled to have her here. Ray Graff, always thrilled
Hi.
To have Ray here.
That's
yeah,
great.
Yes, Ray's thrilled. Alan, always thrilled.
Thank you.
Welcome. So here is our latest issue. We've been talking a lot about healthcare. We've been talking about the rollout and the question marks. So a new poll. So we're going to change subjects.
Oh,
talk
okay.
about a new poll
right.
from Siena College. Moreland and its work largely unknown to voters who strongly want commission to continue investigations. Siena pollster Stephen Greenberg has announced this. And also we are seeing that the The job rating of the governor has up slightly, overall rating better than specific issues. There is also some information here about casinos and getting ready for that vote in November, which seems to be going at least somewhat positively.
Yes, I suggested.
Let us begin with Moreland and its work. Well, nearly three quarters of voters have no opinion about the Moreland Commission, which I assume is because they don't quite understand it.
Yeah. Well, remember that most voters don't know, have the slightest idea who the legislators are.
Right.
But if you ask your students in class, I'm sure you've done this, Joe, I know I have, and you say, and Libby remembers when somebody did that with her, and you say, what do your parents think of the legislature? They all yell out. They think they're all a bunch of crooks. That's what they yell out. So in other words, right now they don't know what the Moreland Act Commission is, which is investigating corruption, basically, and leading the governor towards the legislature, no matter how much he denies it. What is it about? It's about the fact the Moreland Commission was established by the governor to investigate corruption and the role of money in New York State. This is the governor with $29 million in his bank account. It got very confused because the Moreland Act people began to issue subpoenas to places that, according to Ken Lovett of the Daily News, that the governor didn't want them to go, like, for example, to the Democratic Party or, for example, some of his big contributors like the real estate industry. So that is where we're at. The Moreland Act then said, okay, commission, okay, well, what we're going to do is fold our tent and go home and make one recommendation for a constitutional amendment on corruption. That, of course, ended up by being blasted by all the newspapers who said, what do you think you're doing? We know that this is it. We want you to go out and root out the corruption, which we know exists. And then the Moreland Act Commission, made up of very distinguished citizens, DAs, and other people, said, no, we're going for the whole enchilada. And they issued a whole bunch of subpoenas to a whole bunch of people. And I really wondered what the governor had been thinking, to tell you the truth. If you're going to establish it, then you got to stand behind it. You can't start to call in plays, don't subpoena this one, and do subpoena that one.
When you think about the poll, as the point is made here, and by the way, this poll just coming out, according to Siena College pollster Steve Greenberg, New Yorkers may not know what the Moreland Commission is, or what it does, or what its members, or who its members are. They don't even rate the Moreland Commission among the top three corruption busters. But if the choice is for the Moreland Commission to disband or to continue investigating political corruption,
well, of course,
the answer is clear: keep investigating. New Yorkers say, including at least 70% of voters from every party and region of the state. So. And it's certainly no secret that there have been, in the last year, huge political corruption controversies.
Oh yeah.
So and we're at a time where you think you have to do something, right?
Yeah. Well, I'm convinced, for example, that the reason that the Governor Cuomo, has kept the Senate in Republican hands, which he has done, no matter what anybody says, is because he thought some of the top leadership of the state Senate was so corrupt, the Democratic leadership, that he couldn't countenance supporting them anymore. I want you to listen carefully to this. I have every reason to believe I'm right. You go figure out what that means. You just said something that I don't think is true, Joe. You said Siena College pollster Steve Greenberg. He doesn't do the poll. What he does is he mouthpieces for them. Not that there's a big distinction, but that's what happens.
Okay. I want to see how they officially announce him here. How do they say?
Well, they call.
No, they said
poster.
It. They call him.
Yeah,
poster.
They call in their press release. They say Siena poster. College pollster Stephen
right.
Greenberg.
Yeah, that's right. Oh no, I didn't mean to criticize you personally.
No, I was just going
I just
by
wanted
what
to point
they're...
out that what we know is that he's not a pollster.
No, he's
that
the
he's,
PR person.
He's the PR guy.
Right.
So let us talk about when it comes to the overall, well, if not this, what? You know, what else do you do? Because you have to take on the issue of corruption.
The issue is, in this case, in New York State, Andrew Cuomo was...
Which is an issue that all the states, right?
Yes,
I mean, political corruption rears its ugly head wherever you have...
Yes. However, in my state of Massachusetts, when people really get riled up, they can pass a law. They can do initiative and referendum. You cannot do that in New York State. And that is why I think, while we have had a succession of speakers of the Massachusetts legislature going to the pokey, it is also true that I don't get the same feeling of overwhelming corruption that we have, or oppression that we have here in New York State. So will it ever change? Cuomo started this whole thing as a threat to the legislature. Do it my way, or I'm going to get you, and I'm going to do a Moreland Act commission. So they're going, yeah, go ahead and do a Moreland Act. He does a Moreland Act commission. I'm not sure he meant it. I'm not sure he meant that they really should get down to the brass tacks. That's what's interesting about this.
Well, I think your analysis for the state Senate is very interesting, and I think there's probably some truth in the corruption at the top in any place. I think that he's kept the Republicans in power so that he would maintain his power. Because if the Senate and the Assembly were both Republicans and blah, 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 it would change the balance of power. But above and beyond I read in the paper this morning about how, you know, Kathleen Rice, who's the chair, and then the guy from, I think, Onondaga County is the vice chair, you know, she's running for office right now, and she's doing this thing, and they're raising money, and her people are saying, oh, we're not taking money from the people, the law firms that we're going to be investigating, but nobody knows which law firms they're investigating, so how do they know who to take money from?
Yeah.
It's really
bizarre. Well, it's even worse than that.
Bizarre.
It's even more bizarre, than that, in that we had her on the air here one day, and there's no question that she's aiming for higher political office. Mm. Not only the job she's got.
She already did.
I think she'd love to be governor someday. So she can't take a fall for Andrew or anybody else.
Well, it's going to be interesting to see if there's any meat that comes out of this. I mean, you know, here's the deal. Leadership in the state is not going to change because of the Moreland Commission. It's just that simple. The speaker is going to be maintained speaker. The Senate Majority Leader and the Republican Independent Caucus is going to maintain its power base, and things are going to keep going the way they are.
Well, in the near future, you are right. In the longer future, there's no question that the Democrats run the Assembly, and they like Shelley Silver, and he'll probably stay.
Well, he is, yeah. Right.
But the Republican thing, I'm not so sure of. You know, a few more seats get won by the Democrats as New York turns bluer and bluer.
Right.
They may have to eat it.
Well, and I would love it if they did on some levels and not on others. But, you know, if the Republican Independent Caucus, which everyone else knows as the Democratic Independent Caucus or the IDC.
Or the traitors.
Yeah, the traitors or whatever you want to call them. If they maintain their allegiance, it's going to be a little bit harder for the Dems to take over.
Yeah, no, that's
unless, of course, they say Jeff Klein can be the Senate Majority Leader.
Yes, that's right, which they're not going to do because they hate him.
Right.
But what they're doing now is they are issuing some interesting primaries to the independent caucus to see whether they can be driven out of office.
Yeah, yeah. It'll be interesting.
We're going to take a break. When we come back, I want to talk about another part of this, which is poll is the word I'm looking for. Another part of this poll, which has to do with gambling in the casino amendment that goes before voters in November. We will talk about that and many other issues when we return. We welcome your comments. Roundtable at WAMC.org.
Support comes from the Odyssey Bookshop, South Hadley, Massachusetts. Robert Foran will discuss his book, Lawrence and the 1912 Bread and Roses Strike, Wednesday, October 23rd at 7 p.m., odysseybks.com. Norman Rockwell Museum, Stockbridge, Massachusetts, presenting the final week of the exhibition Snow White and the Seven Dwarfs, The Creation of a Classic, on view through October 27th, nrm.org for related programs and details. Careers in Transition, LLC, Albany. Dr. Tom Denham, providing individual career guidance, testing, job strategies, interview preparation, resume, and cover letter writing. CareersInTransitionLLC.com. And Capital Cities Imported Cars, Glenmont, New York, offering new and pre-owned BMWs and Volkswagens. Serving the WAMC listening area since 1975, CapitalCitiesBMW.com.
Welcome back to our roundtable panel. Had a pretty good go around just during the break.
Yeah,
that was fun.
Yeah, that was good.
My work here is done.
Now let us share with the audience.
Well, it's
since
not.
That's why we're here.
Yeah. You got the 7-second delay working.
Let's talk about the. Let's talk about this part of the Siena poll, which is about the casino amendment by a 49-45% margin, up from 46-46% last month. Voters say they would support a constitutional amendment to allow non-Indian Las Vegas-style casinos in New York. However, when read the wording that will appear on the ballot, support for the amendment increases to 56-40% from 55-42% last month. So there's the concept, right?
Yeah.
And then there's the way that it is it is articulated on the the ballot. Steve Greenberg says it's clear the wording of the casino amendment that voters will see on their ballots is influential in moving voters to support the amendment, particularly Democrats and New York City voters. The amendment, as worded, has the support of 56% of Democrats, Republicans, and Independents, and is supported by 54% of upstaters, 56% of New York City voters, and 57% of downstate suburbanites. Given that by most accounts, and certainly there are exclusions to this, but even in New York City, I mean, where we, you know, we thought we had like a blow, you know, a big mayoral race. Are we going to have something that's going to bring mass voters out to the polls to vote on this question?
Profound question.
Right. Well, there's not much upstate. And the New York City race has become lackluster.
Right. I mean, there's nothing huge bringing people out. And I don't think this in and of itself is going to be big enough to bring people out, is it?
No.
Unless they really, really do a blitz in the last 2 weeks.
Which
isn't that surprising?
Right. Yes.
You know, we talked to Jimmy about this a few weeks ago or a month ago. Where's all the PR?
Yeah.
It hasn't happened.
I saw one lawn sign, and they had two props on it. I don't know. The other one was about the environmental stuff, but...
So it was against the lawn sign?
No, it was a vote yes.
You know, here's my feeling, Joe, for whatever it's worth, which isn't much. I think that most people think that if it can bring a couple of dollars into the state coffers, okay, why not? You know, it'll be good. And let people pay. You know, I go around the corner to buy some fizzy water or something like that. And the lines are quite extensive on the lottery. It brings a certain amount of hope to people and the rest. And I don't know. I'm thinking it's going to pass for exactly that reason. It's lethargy, but it's also a sense of, hey, if we can add a couple of bucks and I don't have to pay it, good.
Oh, but people are going to end up paying it because people who go, poor people who go to, it's poor people who a lot of times that buy those tickets.
Yeah, yeah.
Poor people are going to go and try to make something out of nothing for themselves.
Yep.
And they're going to end up in worse situation than they are now. And we are going to pay for it because we're going to have to support them through entitlements and through social service programs. And I don't have a problem with those programs, but I think we need to just connect the dots and recognize what could happen. The other part of this is, you know, I did some work on gambling a long time ago, And when these big casinos come into these communities, much like the big box stores, the little guy disappears. The little cleaners disappears, and the little.
So the bookies will be in trouble.
Yeah, well, maybe, but I'm not so worried about them. But the little stores that are in these communities and the casinos take their place, and the local economy takes a dive.
So if you take a look at, let's go to Massachusetts for a moment, to some of the challenged communities like Springfield or some of the others, that which we love so much and cover so well. Mm-hmm. Do you mean to say that you would be worse off with a major casino than with a challenged sort of poverty-ridden section of town?
Well, I have to tell you this. I go to Rome, New York, for
all roads lead there, you know.
Yeah, I know right. They do. You know, and Turning—that's where Turning Stone is, and you know, and it's outside the city.
Verona, right?
You know, and so there's some hotels popping up and that sort of stuff. But I don't see a major change within the city of Rome. I don't see there being a big change in terms of the financial well-being of the city. So I don't know. I think the city will change once the nanotech college gets settled, and you'll see more people coming in. But, I think that gambling preys on people who, have a dollar and a dream and then have a nightmare.
So then you would say that no one should be allowed to gamble?
No. I just don't think we should be putting taxpayer money into making it happen. That's all.
Also, I mean, to Alan's point about hope, offering hope to people, and if it costs a couple dollars, then so be it. But, you know, have we flooded the market? I mean, just
absolutely.
We have the lottery, we have the casino, we have an awful lot of ways to lose our money and to gamble
exactly.
our money in this state and in this economy, and I wonder.
In the stock market, the biggest one,
play the market. It seems to me, at some point, when you keep on building these things in the state, and then if other neighboring states do it as well, I mean, haven't we hit an overload at some point?
That's why it doesn't matter whether there's if you want to go to a casino, you can go to a casino now with a 2-hour drive, or if you want to go to other ones, a 3-hour drive, or if you want to go to many more, a 4.5-hour drive. New York
and
is
if you want to go to a Racino, and depending on where you
40
are,
minutes
you
know, if you're in Albany, you
know,
right? 20 minutes,
right?
But New York at least 10 years late. I mean, if you look at the saturation of the market and the individual revenue. Profits and losses from the Connecticut casinos and everything else, they're down. New York is way behind. It doesn't matter whether this passes or not, really, in the long run.
You go to places in states where it is legal and you can have them pretty much anywhere, and it becomes, it's spooky because there's nobody there.
There's
like these open places
right.
where there's just, you know, there's 15 of them, and you walk from one to the other, and they all look alike, and there's nobody in them.
We went to one in New Mexico.
Yeah.
And it was scary. It was depressing. You know, you walk through it, and there are these hundreds of machines, and nobody there.
I was in Durango, Colorado, and I got bumped. So I said to them, you have to put me up someplace for the day until my flight. Yeah. So they put me at the casino, and it was, nobody was there. It was a ghost town. It was bizarre.
Well, it's freedom of choice, and it's the market. And so shouldn't people be able to make that choice and succeed or fail based on market forces? And the other thing is, though—
I agree with you, except that don't forget, this is being floated as a way of saving New York's economy. Right.
Well, I think it's a good thing for the Catskills. In other words, I think that there is a case to be made that the Catskills can revitalize from having a major resort.
I have to say this, although I'm probably wrong. I only on the basis of your having just said that, I agree with you.
Wow, that rarely happens.
Let it be said, we put in the books.
I agree.
At 9:54 on this Monday morning.
I agree with you that there are some places where it really makes a certain amount of sense. Revitalizing
really
the Catskills may be one.
Mm-hmm.
And, we'll see what happens.
We'll see what happens. You know, what I don't want to have happen is this. I went to Las Vegas once. I had a first stopover. I walk off the plane, and there are slot machines.
In the airport.
Right.
Yeah.
I think it's
and
disgusting.
In the airport.
In
Walmart.
The airport.
In
it's
Kmart.
Horrible.
In the,
it's in just.
In the gas stations.
It's insane.
From what I understand, and of course, I've never been to Vegas, but what I understand, the slot machines at the airport are not all that friendly as far as paying out winnings.
I don't know.
So
I
you
never,
probably wouldn't want to do that.
I wouldn't do it anyway.
Well, fine.
I only buy a lottery ticket
Saint
for Powerball when it's over $200 million.
Yeah. Aha!
But you
that's
do.
That's a double
I do
standard.
Only once.
Me
so,
too.
So that $5 million to the Pride Center, $5 million to the shelter, and $5 million to the synagogue. And
what about AMC? Hello.
Okay, and then maybe if Alan's really, really, really nice to me.
Well, you know, $10 million, we could rename it the Libby.
No.
That is right.
Right.
With all of that said, do you think it'll pass?
Yes,
it'll pass.
Probably. But, yeah. You know, the idea that, oh, if people read the proposition, who reads those propositions? I mean, really.
It's a great proposition, though. The wording is great.
There's a ballot in Massachusetts where it says what the guy's name is, the tree warden, and where he lives, what road he lives on, or
the,
she lives
the highway
on.
Superintendent
yeah,
races.
Yeah, right,
I know.
Right.
The tree warden.
A tree warden. Yeah, in Alford, where I used to live.
Yeah. No, but really, warden, you know, right. You walk into those things. I mean, when it was the machine, you'd have to look up to the right or the left.
Inspector of Graves?
Right. In 6-point type, at least now you get a piece of paper. We'll see if people actually read it.
Yeah, but the whole, and I'm sure we'll get mail on this, but the whole idea that they would load the game by changing the wording
that's
in the
right.
proposition is just awful.
And it's sort of part of the whole thing, you know? You load the dice, you load the proposition.
Yeah, or as Ray would say, you load the machine.
I think that will account for, I mean, people say yes or no on casinos. That's all. They don't care what it says.
Well, I do think some people read it. They're
but, I mean, if you're smart enough to read it.
Desperately for a clue.
If you're smart enough to read it, then I think your critical reasoning will tell you that maybe the wording's a little flowery.
No, because they've done a poll which showed that people what people would think about the generic proposition.
I saw
but
the poll.
Also
yeah.
compared
to the
what they think
language.
Once they read the proposition itself.
Yeah, because the language talks about economic development. I mean, it really makes it seem like it's going to be the best thing since sliced bread for New York's economy.
We are out of time.
Oh no!
I'm sorry. A mixed response.
So
well, we'll see you next week, right?
Yes.
Excellent.
Here.
Unless you want to come every day.
She
doesn't
love
miss us that much.
Except I'm
to.
Not here every
Libby
day.
Libby is shuffling off to Buffalo.
I'd love to, but,
and
love to, but I have other plans, as
yeah,
the young woman
well,
once said to me.
Well, if you want to start paying me, I can come every day.
Oh, yeah. God, did that hurt. Gotta go. Time to go.
Well,
what a fun hour.
A little gambling right here in the studio. We'll be back after these messages.